State Representative Tacky Chan is joining us once again for one of our weekly Tacky Talks. How are you, Tacky?
Doing good, Joe. Happy to be here as we're closing in the end of session on Thursday the 21st and in another 90 degree scorcher with extra humidity.
Yeah, just to add to the unpleasantness of it all, you know, to add that humidity. But yeah, we're in the middle of a heat wave, so certainly remind folks to take precautions for themselves, their family, and their pets too.
Yep, always a reminder this time of year to not to leave your pets and children, or even yourself, in a car that doesn't have air conditioning on, and or the windows totally open. But even today, I mean, totally open windows are still going to be very tough. And remember, the UV light is very strong this time of year, despite cloud cover. And, definitely take precautions to protect yourself, sunscreen, hats or umbrellas. And, hydrate. You know, always remember to hydrate. Something as simple as that is people, even if you're indoors or air conditioning, definitely still hydrate. It doesn't take long for the weather to take its toll. And this time of year, it's hard because your electric bill will spike. As we have enormous consumption, and we're still working hybrid at home. And just like the last couple of years, during the summer times when it was warm and people saw electrical price increases, your family is home, and now it's summertime, so some of your family is probably home, depending on if your kids have run off all day about you. Your computers are on, you're plugged in, definitely try to do what I'm doing here right now with my laptop. Do not plug it in, let the battery drain, and plug it in the evening when the power is a little cheaper, off peak usage. And try your best to, not use lights if you're in good sunlight, and draw the shades to keep the house cool, and try to pick a temperature that's comfortable, but no reason to have a freezer in the house.
And the good news is the latest tests from the beach water look good, so all the beaches are open for swimming.
Absolutely. As you're all aware, there was a huge lifeguard shortage, just like all the workforce shortages, and the DCR have been working hard to create new incentive pay to get people to work at the lifeguard beaches. But if you don't see a lifeguard, obviously take caution. The a little surprising, beach water quality is okay right now, given the fact that we haven't had enough rain to flush the bay out. I mean, we are in a drought condition in many parts of the state, and we didn't have a lot of snowfall to pack in the natural aquifers and the reservoirs. So, I mean, I know people enjoy being outside and whatnot, but I mean, we need rain right now. We need rain in a bad way. And unfortunately, when rain in Quincy goes through the storm drain system, it flushes out the storm drains, which actually creates a bit of pollution in our bay. But I mean, also need the water to rise up a bit and let the tides flush the bay out. So, it's kind of a mixed thing. I mean, we want good water quality by reducing pollution in the water, but we need the rain right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Seeing as we're on the topic of the climate, as you well know, the president was here in Massachusetts just yesterday. And I know you and I had talked previously about the speaker's strong support of renewable energy, specifically wind power.
Yeah, this is a twofold issue for the speaker about wind power. Obviously, self-explanatory, we want more renewable energy within our utility system that we want to use at home and for industry and commercial and so forth. But also more importantly as well is the creation of jobs. So he's tying two things together. It's not just about purchasing wind power off of Block Island in Rhode Island. As I like to say, you can't see the wind power, you're less likely to be offended by it. But secondly, we need jobs, and that's windmill assembly, part assembly, long-term maintenance, and utilizing Brayton Point as one of the transmission node areas, because it's old, dirty power plant, or it has a transmission tie-in from there, as well as take advantage of the South Coast's large swaths of industrial water, waterfront property, Massmont waterfront industrial property, to become the future of windmill assembly and manufacturing of parts, and all the other things that are required to put these things in the water, and also the long-term maintenance repairs. And the hope is that if there is a lot of success, in the South Coast, we can replicate this, up and down the coastline of the state regarding, be able to move wind parts onto the water, obviously, and then you can bring it to deep water. I mean, this is, it's offshore windmill, folks. I mean, it ain't hard. You need a coastal-based access point to get things into the water so you can go put them permanently as structures. And of course, if you're not on the water, ancillary businesses that support these things. I use the example like the shipyard, right? Those, I'm a little young for the shipyard, but those who remember the shipyard, a lot of the old industrial buildings are now housing actually in the city. You know, we're actually supporting the shipyard needs because not everything was made on the shipyard. So a lot of the parts and manufacturing of small specific items or large specific items, you know, was throughout the city in Quincy, Weymouth, and Braintree and delivered at a shipyard. And the vision's actually similar idea when you're trying to put in, you know, 100-foot windmills, 300-plus-foot, poles or whatever, the structure itself, you know, plus the turbines and the bands and all the plastics and the electronics. And, you know, it's not as simple as, you know, a turbine and one belt, and then you just stick it to a windmill. I mean, it's very high tech, as well as, you know, general on hands heavy metal work. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a very broad range. I think people kind of oversimplify what a windmill is involved. That's kind of long-term vision. We dumped quite a bit of money, of ARPA money, into this, and we're going to put some transportation bond, has some money also dedicated towards windmill. And this climate change bill has tax credits of $35 million designed specifically for businesses to support the windmill industry, more specifically the manufacturing and the support of manufacturing of windmills. So we are going to do everything we can to encourage job creation as a result of going renewable.
I know that part of it also is restoring or maintaining incentives to purchase electric vehicles. Is that still in the works, Jackie?
Yeah, it's in there. We create a tiered system based on the price of vehicles. It is try to incentivize folks to buy, quite frankly, vehicles outside your price range. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I can't afford an electric vehicle. We're talking about vehicles over $50,000, $55,000. So we established things like $3,500 rebates, and there's like several different rebate tiers, you know, based on the price of the vehicle to try to get people to purchase it. And the idea is that if, you know, there's enough marketplace for electric vehicles and, you know, plug-in vehicles, and certain types of hybrids, because hybrids can be plug-in. Most people don't realize that. We are able to, you know, get to a market saturation point where the price goes down and, people who are more middle income can afford them, but we got to trigger it right now. People are thinking, you know, high gas prices are not a good time for electric. I do like to remind folks, electrical price is also very high too. And this is not a normal world we're living in on energy. This is very abnormal. In a normal world, the cost of energy is sufficiently low enough that the cost of gas is much, much higher than we're using for plug-in. But, you know, we're looking at right now, you know, close to $10 per kilowatt. And it's really out of control right now, as we're in a summertime peak, plus the impact of Ukraine, plus global market chaos, and supply chain issues regarding demand. Energy is not something you kind of like, hey, you know, I can flip switches and, you know, suddenly a whole bunch of renewables or natural gas suddenly becomes readily available. And, you know, natural gas in particular, you have to, you know, crank up the refineries, but you max out. Same thing with renewable power. I mean, you still max out at some point. Your solar panels can't generate anymore, and the windmills can't, you know, spinning faster doesn't make it windmill faster, actually. All your windmills are tapped out, meaning you've tapped every single one out. That's why right now we're kind of in a very unique situation in energy, which I hope to never, ever see again in our lifetimes, whenever we get past this situation.
So since last we talked, the state now has a new budget.
We do have a budget. It's been sent to the governor's desk. We voted on Monday. That gives us a bit of a buffer for governor's vetoes and amendments. The 10-day start clicks on the 10-day veto window. Actually, today, the 21st, we're closing on the 31st. So, you know, it's actually a very good budget. And I'm going to tell you, I mean, it's probably going to be the best budget I'm going to ever see in my career. Wow. That includes my time when I staffed. We had an amazingly strong prior fiscal year. We're anticipating maybe not equally strong, but, you know, still very robust. The wages and the cost of doing business and everything obviously driving up everybody's, you know, pocketbooks in terms of paying things. But, you know, increased wages also means increased income taxes, which also reflects the fact that we actually have to keep up the cost of living ourselves. The state doing business just like you at home and business is also going up. My electric bill doesn't like magically stay static. I mean, we have fluctuations as everyone else. So, I mean, that's all accounted for. But we able to put record numbers of local aid and Chapter 70, which is about, I believe, in the $50 million zone combined. Plus, we have a whole lot of money for local projects, including Queen Chase Resources, the Germantown Neighborhood Center, some money for the historical preservation of the Adams Crypts. You know, we put some money in Squatter Point Park regarding the ferry service. You know, so we scattered a lot of money around different important not-for-profit service agencies and local capital projects and some city projects as well. Great one is the Faxon Field Park, which is one of the few fully accessible playgrounds in the South Shore that has people with children who have different types of physical challenges are able to use that playground. Very proud that we have one of those in Quincy, and full accessibility, equals equality. If we have full accessibility to a place, it's not for everyone. It's not equal for everyone. So, that's very important. So we'll see how it continues. We also put a little bit of money in for the MBTA. Actually, it's not a little, it's a lot of money for the MBTA regarding the safety standards. As we want to try to get that up to speed as quickly as possible as the feds have figured out, understaffing and not fast enough maintenance funding, even though they've spent well into $2 billion on capital projects, we still need to do some more acceleration. And you may have seen the Channel 5 story about on the government center and some of the structural supports at government centers is very, very challenged as they take apart the garage, which was, I think, the site of an unfortunate accident.
There was suggested during a hearing on the MBTA that agency be eliminated, Tacky. What do you think about that?
Well, there is no, I'm not aware of a state that has a transit authority that isn't somewhere quasi-independent. And partially it's because of debt service. So right now, the way the debt service is set up, the MBTA is responsible for its own debt. Your fares and any other external money sources actually pays for the debt service of the T. So it's off the state books. There have been suggestions in the past to help the T by adopting all that debt. But then again, it affects our credit rating mm-hmm. at our level. And the taxpayers have to pick up those costs directly, as opposed to subsidizing the T using 1 cent of the sales tax and any federal funds plus fare and advertising and rental money to generate. It would help them immensely in the sense that, they'll take off 30% off their books. 30% of the budget goes to debt. But it would be shifted to our side of it. And it also won't stop increased debt service anyway, because, it's a 10-year plus system. Mm-hmm. And, it's always going to be endless capital projects to begin with. So since the state doesn't run the debt service, doesn't run the capital projects, has really no oversight about prioritization, it's up to the MBT to do so. And this includes expansion. Part of the debt includes, the community rail service, Old Colony, Greenbush, all the new garages are built on the edges of the Green Line as part of the Big Dick mitigation. Today we have expansion of the Green Line into Somerville. But also, that's also really federally funded. A lot of waiting for federal funds before you're going to do any kind of expansion projects. And I know for a fact in the books, there's always projects in the Blue Line and others on expansion that it's not going to happen if there isn't assistance from the federal government. So, it's one of those funny things about the MBTA is that the debt service is really the most challenging part. And it's an endless, as you all know, it's endless. They're constantly going to have to upgrade escalators. They're constantly going to have to make handicap accessibility even better. They constantly have to do a new Charlie card-ish system, which they're going to definitely need a new system soon. The current system is quite old. And we've all seen what happened to the MBTA trains themselves. It takes years to get bids out, years to construct the parts, years to get them on the rails because it's customized for the MBTH system. Trains are not something you buy at Walmart, big box stores. It's not like one size fit all. You have to make them to fit our tunnels, 100-year tunnels. You got to make your cars fit there. We obviously want to go to electric/hybrid and in the future, 100% electric buses. In the long term, there's also meaning we have to build all new MBTA garages that accommodate the current vehicles, the next stage in transition, and whatever the next stage after that stage is. We don't want garages built for 20 years and have to be torn down because they can't accommodate future clean vehicles. And, you know, we did a little bit of homework. I mean, the purchase of a clean electric bus before you customize it for your customers is about $400,000-ish, give or take. And, you know, obviously the savings is a long-term regarding not having to use diesel fuel. We got that initial upfront cost with diesel buses are closer to $200,000 and $250,000. And I know I've been getting a little bit of a flack about the MBTA garage and the old Lowe's, you know, in the $400 million zone. But I'd like to remind folks that that is not just building a garage just for today's diesel vehicles. If that was the case, I mean, you wouldn't spend $400. I mean, you're looking to do $400 million to future-ready this garage, you know, for the next 100 years. And that's not cheap because you got to be able to transition. That includes school buses and even your own home. If you're going to have electric vehicles, I think the future needs to be fast charging. And that means you got to get a higher voltage connection outside your house. You might have to spend, you know, I think it's like not even $500 for the actual physical devices, but you know, you have to have installation, you got to have safety, you know, have electrician, you know, local building inspection and all that stuff. So, you know, it can add up quite a bit in the short run and, you know, have an alternative metering system to which is something that actually this bill is also trying to address. And the climate bill about, you know, encouraging off-peak charging and how do you actually know what you're paying for? And we want to encourage off-peak charging, but you don't have a separate meter or separate, you know, calculation system. We don't know which device in your home is using power to time. So-called smart metering is about whether or not the utility can monitor every plug in your home and know what device is there so it can determine, you know, the load power of your home, then, you know, determine the load power required in the distribution systems in a certain community so have the right amount of power going in. In electric vehicles, you know, we'd like to charge, you know, overnight because as I said, you know, nighttime is cheaper off peak. But, you know, you want to know when that happens from a utility company standpoint so you know how much, you know, power to pump into your part of the grid.
Yeah, we really are at the dawn of a new energy age, you know, it's hard. Change is hard.
Well, and there's also a lot of engineering involved. People, it's like sausage making, you know, people turn on the lights, no one cares how it got there. If you're turning on your water, it's clean and safe. You don't think about too hard about what's going on, right? You know, you flush your toilet, it flushes, it goes away. You don't think about too hard what happens next. Let's be frank about this. Right. And same thing on our level. We just talked about the state budget. I mean, you know, we got a lot of Chapter 70 money for your schools and ed reform. It's huge amount of money, but no one really thinks about it. I mean, you're happy, you know, your school is receiving additional funding from the state, but, you know, we understand this taxpayer impacts and, you know, the impact it has on, you know, because people's pocketbooks, but, you know, made a conscious effort in long-term investment in our schools. Same thing with school building assistance funding. I mean, that's a very important thing for Quincy. As you all know, there's a whole lot of school renovation and new schools built in the city. And, you know, the state picks up between 60 and 90% of those costs of the debt. So it takes it off the property tax impact, hopefully, but it put it on taxpayer books instead. So, I mean, the entire state is subsidizing Quincy school construction.
Does the new budget include legalized gambling, Tacky?
Well, you mean more legalized gambling? Sports betting is still in conference committee. Jerry Parasella, who's the chair of economic development and emerging technologies, whose office is right next to mine. You know, they're working hard and they're talking with the Senate counterparts. And, you know, it's down in the wires, as I pointed out. I mean, today's 10 days before governor's vetoes can be sustained. We have no intention of being here after July 31st unless there's a major COVID meltdown of some insanity that forces us back into formal sessions. As a reminder, folks, we never closed session in 2020. We actually maintained formal sessions beyond the rules deadline. We suspended all the rules to get through COVID, where we're still in formal sessions and still doing a whole lot of, you know, non-session briefings and abnormally high number of briefings during COVID 2020. And not surprising, a lot of us are somewhat looking forward to actually taking a break after, you know, 2019, 2020, 21, and now halfway through 22. So the basically 3.5 years of nonstop sessions, plus all the work that you guys never see on TV that we actually have to do before and after sessions run. So, you know, we're kind of all looking forward for a little bit of a break here. But, you know, not to belabor my desire for a sleep. We have sports betting still waiting around. We did approve internet lottery as part of the economic development bill in the House. We're not sure what's going to happen in the Senate on those things. The Senate hasn't addressed internet lottery since 2016, I believe, was the last time they tried to do something, or maybe 18 was the last time they tried to do something on internet lottery. I know they did like a couple of sessions where they tried to push through the economic development bill. And sports betting, I think you guys saw in the news, was kind of a tough vote in the Senate. I mean, they end up not taking a roll call. They ended up doing it by voice vote, by unanimous consent on the final sports betting bill. So there's a lot of bit of a mystery there about where the vote totals are and, whether it can sustain a governor's veto or a governor's amendment. Because I think the governor does want to do this, but maybe what we do is exactly what he wants. He always can amend the bill and send it back, but you still need enough votes to accept or adopt governor's amendments or amend a governor's amendment. So I'm not clear what the vote total is over there because, well, there's been informal polling by Stato's News Service. Until you push the button or you say yay or nay, informal polling to me doesn't matter.
right. It's like exit polling.
I need the roll call.
Right. Yeah, you need the actual number before you can put it in writing for sure.
Yeah, the House has a 2/3 majority on sports betting. So, our concerns are not nearly as much.
Right. One thing I was reading that I didn't realize was that there's a proposal to make the mandatory marriage age 18 years old. I didn't realize that it wasn't in Massachusetts.
Yeah, I mean, this one surprised me too over the last few years of learning about this. Massachusetts does not have a mandatory minimum age for marriage, which means, you can have marriages at, age whatever, 14-year-olds getting married. And it does happen. I think a couple of thousand marriages a year in Massachusetts are under the age of majority. And we're one of the few states that did not set that. In the state budget, we finally addressed this issue, and it's actually pretty important. I mean, the age of majority is a very, actually fairly modern concept, to be honest with you. It's really about 70 or so years old. I mean, marriage under the age of 18 was not uncommon in the 1800s, right?
Right. Well, people lived a lot less then too.
Yeah, you're lucky you get to age 40. Exactly. Yeah. In the 1800s. So not surprising, kids were marrying in their mid-teens, but this is the 21st century and our standards have changed and our life expectancy has changed. And, family planning has changed. Not planning to have kids at 15 anymore. People are looking to have kids, at 30 and older. Mm-hmm. So we're living in a very different world. And this is one of those laws that definitely need to be updated to reflect the world we're living in now. And, we're one of the last states remaining, as I said, that, hasn't addressed this issue. So very thankful and happy that we put that in part of the state budget. And we do not expect to have a problem with the governor on this one.
Right. Yeah. No, it was eye opening, I think, for a lot of folks to realize that it didn't actually exist until just now.
Yeah. One of the things about the legislature is that we get a chance to learn about new stuff that none of us have ever had to experience or encounter ourselves. And this issue has been kicking around about 5 or so years. Mm-hmm. When the bill first came out, obviously I have no idea, have to learn about it, listen to, the arguments and all that. I was like, this is crazy. this is the 21st century. We have to, have our laws reflect that. So, this is a gig where you get to listen to all sides of an issue and new issues come up. And, you never knew it was a problem before until you find out about it.
Right, exactly. Are you seeing the Statehouse travelers, vacationers back to where it might have been a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I'm back in the Statehouse a bit more often, try to get the formal sessions. Obviously, conference committee meetings were in person, so I definitely made my appearances there. But still, this format is the majority request for meetings. Mm-hmm. I mean, it still remains video is the number one preference for most meetings still. But I've seen some more kids, a few more tour groups, but far, far, far away from 2019 and before, where you literally walk through the halls and you just run to children like all over the place as wow. Tourists. And even along the Freedom Trail, when you go outside the State House, I saw, mostly full, but not quite full trolleys and tour guides. And you have, the people that are wearing colonial costumes to colonial outfits to, provide tours and those very heavy, hot outfits since July 7. But Yeah, I mean, also not hearing as many different languages on the street, you can always, obviously can hear foreign tourists. So yeah, there's a lot life, less life back, but still a far cry from pre-COVID.
Right. And really the future of the pandemic is really uncertain with all these variants floating around.
Well, BA5 is the new one. The guys who make these decisions and the medical scientific level have decided not to add a new Greek alphabet letter. I mean, we're still at Omicron level, BA now 5. I don't know how many variants deep we're in, but BA5 has proven to be more infectious than all other previous variants, which again, it's frightening. And and also has the ability to get past your immune response even faster than previous versions, meaning that you've had COVID before, you're vaccinated. It's a race against time between your body and the virus to get to the virus first, right? It's literally like as soon as the virus enters, your body's got to manufacture those antibodies now as quick as it can and get those antibodies to the virus, at lightning speeds. And part of invasion, of course, is who can get to your lung cells first to protect your lungs before they get chewed up by the virus. As the virus wants to make more virus using your lung cells. So, the concern of BA5 is that they've been talking about evasion, so to speak, of your immune system, evasion of your vaccinated, or prior infected system, where your body knows, hey, it's here, we got to go kill it. It moves so fast, and it takes a little longer for your body to know what's there, that your body can't respond fast enough to go kill this virus before it really takes hold. But again, vaccinations, prior infections, does teach your body how to deal with it. It's a combination of speed. How quickly can you respond? The defenses get up fast. And again, we still encourage people to get their boosters and your fourth boosters if you're age eligible, to keep your body on alert that should it show up, try to move as quickly as possible to kill the virus off. But with very low death rate still for those who are vaccinated, in particular, and it's only 60% ish of the population right now is BA5. More actually, 6% of infections is BA5. So you still got 40% of prior versions that the vaccines, still fairly effective against, well over 60% efficacy, for some of the newest ones. And of course, the original or earlier variants, closer to 90% efficacy for the earlier variants. So it's not useless, believe me.
And as we speak, some breaking news. President Biden tested positive for COVID-19 today and is experiencing mild symptoms, according to a report from Channel 5.
Well, and sadly, the more you're out there, the odds go up. It's not complicated. The more you're around other people, you don't know where they've been, the odds go up significantly of you potentially catching the virus. I've heard of people getting this thing four times. And
Yes.
each time they get it, I've been told it's not a positive experience. Some of these people have long COVID impact and also getting it, which just makes it doubly worse because they have long COVID impact on your respiratory system, longer time to recover, and you get infected again when your body's still recovering for the first time, just does not make it any better. So no, I'm not surprised. I'm sorry to say. I mean, the raw amount of people you're in contact with, your odds go up, and that's the risk of people taking, whether it be in a movie theater or a party or in this case, a number of different press conference and gatherings. And you gotta admit, it's been pretty good, given the fact that he's been traveled to Europe, he's traveled to Asia. I know there's a lot of protection around the president. But I mean he's been meeting a lot of people and a lot of travel in the last several years. And exposure risk was always going to be very high, especially let's say BA5 variant, if it is BA5 variant, given the transmission rate, it latches on fast. But he's also boosted four times. Obviously, he's the president. He has the best medical care that you could possibly get. I wouldn't, if I'm Kamala Harris, I wouldn't get too excited about being president next.
So, and interestingly too, hospitals in our area are still pretty full, not necessarily completely because of COVID, but maybe from other procedures and things that people were putting off over the past couple of years.
I told you about a website last week, which I shared with you. I'm not how you're going to share that with the public.
I'll put it on the screen for folks to see. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you know, there's a several websites, including the CDC, but there's actually an interesting one out of the Minneapolis, I think. Mm-hmm. One of these papers that does the 7-day average of the hospitalization rate of ICU as well as hospital beds and 7-day average of COVID confirmed patients in hospitals. And it's still floating at 80% capacity for inpatient and right about the same thing for ICU beds. And for example, like Milton Hospital, if I remember correctly, has like 6 ICU beds maybe and like 30 rooms or something like that. So you got to put that in perspective, right? I mean, the Suffolk County, Greater Boston area, you know, includes like Quincy and Weymouth and others. I mean, has a monstrous number of hospital beds compared to other parts of the country, but still 80% is pretty high. And yeah, not all of it's COVID related, but because of the nature of outpatient services and, you know, how we do medicine, I mean, hospital beds generally are not that full to begin with. So you factor in, you know, people would have severe illnesses, you know, unfortunately, if you have a stroke or cancer or, you know, other life-threatening happenings that requires you to be in a hospital bed, and you got other people, COVID patients, that means they have to keep the bed separated, right? COVID ward takes away beds for everybody else. And, you know, a lot of folks that are COVID positive tend to be unvaccinated. So, you know, again, as I keep repeating all through the last couple of years, you know, you try to do the best to keep yourself safe, particularly if you're unvaccinated. You know, try not to give it to anybody else, you know, even if you are vaccinated because of the asymptomatic component. But I mean, as Dr. Fauci said, actually quite a few years ago now, it feels like, you know, everybody's going to get it at this rate if the infection and the ability to infect faster continues. And it looks like he's right. The faster it's able to infect you, more likely almost everybody's probably going to get it. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, Joe put up that website, you know, please, everyone, you know, take a quick peek. And it gives you an idea that hospitals are not going to be able to do as much non-COVID, non, you know, emergency life-saving medicines that some of you probably have delayed many medical procedures because of that. And the only ones that can, quite frankly, defeat COVID is ourselves. You know, only we can do it. And I think that messaging is not really well out there. You can't beat disease being in a hospital. You can only beat the disease by doing the best at home. And I'm under no illusions. At this stage of the game, you know, I'm still avoiding COVID somehow, but I'm going to admit that at some point I'll get infected one day too. It's just the question is when.
Right. Yeah. And of course, it's running into the same issue that, you know, a lot of companies are facing is the workforce shortage, even in the healthcare industry, between, you know, retirements and attrition and folks just burned out. So it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. And if you got workforce to become sick, it just doubles up on the workforce shortage problem because you're probably working shorthand at some stage. One person gets COVID, you know, somebody, you know, hopefully are vaccinated, you know, people get different responses, but I mean, even if you're out like 2 or 3 days, like, you know, if you were during flu season, you know, any prior COVID type illnesses, I mean, that affects workforce production in general. And if you're in a high volume location and you can infect customers, you know, infect other customers, that means another person's out of the workforce, right? That customer gets infected in your shop. That person has a job somewhere. And now that other employer is now lost out an employee because, you know, of exposure. Infection. And again, you know, vulnerable populations like my mother, and I'm sure everyone has a loved one or a friend who is a highly vulnerable person, you know, still unrecommended. You should try not to get that person very unrecommended. Do not give them the disease. Try to do your best to keep them safe. But I mean, I'll admit, I mean, I've been out a lot more. People see me a bit more out. Obviously, I've been at more outdoor than indoor events. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's still, you know, level risk tolerance. And you know, I wear my mask, I have my wet wipes in my pockets and all that stuff. But the speed of this BA5 infection, you know, can have, you know, it doesn't take long to get it. I mean, it's time duration. The longer you're around someone with the illness, they talk to you, they breathe on you. I mean, it comes out of the respiratory area. The longer it's, you know, they do that, the odds go up. So, you know, like I said, the only one that can beat the disease is us. You know, it's not anybody else. And You know, everyone has to do their part. But, you know, I am out more. As I've gone to the State House, there are more people around the State House. I have ability to social distance a bit better in my own office, but, you know, I don't have a HAV system. I have windows that is now people power washing the retaining wall, so I can't open my windows. This past month, as they're doing a retainer wall repair next to my, literally my window looks at a retaining wall. So, you know, window option isn't available right now. Yeah, I know. It's like, open your windows. No, I can't. I got retaining wall splatter all over the place, you know, in front of my window. So yeah, I mean, but, you know, people should all decide, you know, what their risk tolerance is. It's up to you all.
Yeah, exactly. We haven't talked about world affairs yet today. The latest in Ukraine, Jackie?
Well, the Russians have keep moving in the eastern region, kind of taking a little bit of time. And it's definitely looking like trench warfare, where everyone moves a line, tries to hold off, push forward a line, and then stop and resettle in. And artillery. You guys have been hearing about it in news. I mean, the Russian artillery is not exactly precise by any stretch of the imagination. And they don't clearly have things like drone technology that the entire, you know, West has given to Ukraine, the Europeans, Americans, and many others, where drone technology is a new type of warfare of, you know, fully, you know, battlefield use. And the Ukrainians are still pulling in reserves and foreign fighters, and, you know, to get themselves to 1 million people as a reserve force, which they need to arm, and they need bullets. And it's right now, as we talk about supply chain at global level, it is supply chain and moving weapons from European and US and other countries that are trying to support them and get that in. And it's not just guns. I mean, it's also medical supplies, food, blankets, keeping that railway, essential area open to get the wounded out. I mean, you've seen the pictures of people just, you know, losing everything in a blink of an eye when a shell hits their home, and, you know, and you got to get them out of a war zone. It's so sad. And you got, like, you know, more than 10% of the population have officially fled the country. And now they're shooting missiles into the Russians are shooting missiles kind of almost randomly into urban centers on the west side of the country now, again, fear tactics. But the Ukrainians are really kind of, you know, we're moving to trench warfare. I mean, you'll move, get, sit in. And I fully expect more back and forth. And President Zelensky is definitely continue to be a master in public relations on the global stage. And his wife is actually going to, I think, has she done it yet? She's supposed to speak to the Joint House of Congress in person. This week. She's in the United States right now. So I haven't seen it yet either. But, you know, the Russians have now, quote unquote, doing maintenance on the gas system, which is now strangling the Europeans. Thankfully, it's summertime, so you're dealing with summer load and not winter heating. And the EU is making the hard push that everyone reduces their natural gas consumption by 15%, which means, sadly, coal is coming back online, which we do not want, but circumstances demand. And, you know, obviously they're pushing to get more renewables up, but, you know, they can only, like I said, there's only so many solar panel windows that, you know, being tapped out now, and you still got to build and add. So coal is coming back online in Europe, which is not good for the environment. And nuclear, which I know is a mixed conversation, politically touching the US, but, you know, nuclear, you know, is something that's going to be brought more heavily to the forefront in European countries and even Japan, because they have almost no fossil fuel capacity in Japan. Nuclear power plants have to come back online because they need to reduce dependence on natural gas, and natural gas is very expensive when you're shipping it by cargo. So, you know, nuclear is coming back online in Japan. And I've actually been to Japan's energy supply folks, and they don't have a lot of perfect wind. And the geography is not great for sun because they don't have very good locations for sunlight. And they also have environmental problems regarding green space, and things like solar panels eat green space. So, I mean, nuclear is coming back online in Japan. So, I mean, the Ukraine war, again, has enormous impact on global supply chain, you know, including precious metals, rare metals, which are found in things like your cell phone and electric cars that we talked about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously continuation of stress of the you know, natural gas supply chain.
I'd be curious to see if in the end there ends up being an East and a West Ukraine, you know, like Korea and Vietnam.
You know, the Russians, you know, have demonstrated this before. It's called Chechnya and Georgia, where they claim certain Russian speaking spaces as back in the Russian population. And I think the people, I don't think people fully realize that in Europe, you know, ethnic and linguistic and religious discrimination is how they look at ethnic racial issues. It's not like here where we perceive it as a strictly a skin color or appearance. You know, in European countries, they actually more closely look at, you know, what village you're from, what language you speak, what religion you practice, what culture you follow. And, you know, the tendency, not surprising, is people want to be around other people that are like them. I mean, it's a human behavior. So, I mean, the Russian logic is that the Russian speakers are following Russian customs and you know, so forth. You know, the idea is that we want to bring all Russians into the fold, which is one of the reasons why, you know, Putin is looking at Ukraine. They have a lot of long, long history, good and bad, between that region and the different empires of Russia. But I mean, they're targeting places on purpose to invade, because they're claiming, you know, Russian, you know, oppression and need for independence. I'm not saying they're not oppressed Russians. I'm obviously not saying that, but it's a justification for Putin's invasion. And it won't be the last place he stops. Now, will the world and Ukraine accept seceding land to Russia, including an enormous amount of coastal space to expand their influence in the Black Sea?
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. But the fact that, you know, they beat them back trying to take Kiev, and they're able to engage essentially in a, you know, trench warfare, like I said, moving one line at a time, fully backed by more precise U.S. weaponry and European weaponry. You know, winter is coming, and I'm not making just Game of Thrones reference, but those who watched in the spring as the Russian military heavy equipment was getting bogged down in mud and bad weather, it's coming. The bogged down and bad weather is going to be hitting Ukraine at some point in the next 3 or so months, and moving heavy equipment is going to be near impossible for the Russians to do easily. And the Russians are most likely desperately trying to get their rail system up support. They're very rail dependent. So the Ukrainians will most likely, you know, try to target more rail-based transport. That way they don't have to rely on trucks and getting trapped in the weather. Obviously, they're attacking the supply depots of weapons, you know, definitely targets you got to take out. And the fact they took back Snake Island, I know it's a little island that you all heard about the Ukrainians on there, you know, I won't get into this, but, you know, the explicitives they told the Russians, and you know, became a national stamp of pride for Ukrainians. It was taken back to Ukrainians, but that's an important location because it creates a defensive position for coastal defenses and shipping lanes in that area. So, you know, it is a kind of a three-front-ish battle. You got the Donbass region, and you got the region across the Black Sea, and every time the Ukrainians hold out longer, it costs the Russians more money.
True. Yes. And their economy is feeling the impacts of it as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, they were a top 10, 11, 12, depending what year you're in, economy. They're free falling. And they're trying to prop up the stuff, like they created their own YouTube channel now to replace YouTube, because you can't have YouTube anymore in Russia. You know, they replaced McDonald's with its own McDonald's because they bought the McDonald's franchisees out and from McDonald's corporate, and trying to like bring back, you know, people's at home who enjoy certain type of standard living. And whether or not they're able to pull that off in the long run to give people the same standard of living without Western branding, we'll see how that goes. But don't forget, this also includes entertainment. I mean, Western, US, European, even Japan, Korea, and other countries, entertainment is global because of streaming. And, you know, people, you know, gotten used to that quality of life, and they don't have access to that now. So, and interestingly, one of the independent TV stations that shut down in Russia is now rebroadcasting from Latvia.
Hmm.
So they relocated to Latvia, and they're now broadcasting into Russia, independent, non-state owned news, and seeing if they can reach people on that. But even they say it's hard to report news when you have essentially a police state watching everybody about whether or not they're, you know, looking at something you shouldn't look at. And it becomes part of media that's not within Russia.
Right. As we're talking today, Tacky, the back here at home, the January 6th committee is set to wrap up their hearings this evening, actually.
Yeah, I would like to be able to watch that if session doesn't go too late tonight. I wish I had more time to focus on it. It's been really busy for me in the last 2 months to do that. I only got to watch the first prime time. They got little bits and pieces during a mid-afternoon when I'm trying to take a bite to eat and before the next meeting begins. But it's been actually very fascinating. And the Strategic Assist Committee appears by all means to do an incredibly good job on framing an argument here. This is a public hearing. It's not a trial. Okay, right. Folks, should be aware of that. This is not a trial. It's a public hearing. And the public hearing is to present the argument that the committee wants to present, bringing the facts of the case they have done. And this is a police power in the sense they have subpoena power. So you got to tell the truth. Otherwise, you're going to go to jail. Right. This is pains and perjury type situation.
Yeah, so, as Steve Bannon found out. Yeah.
Oh, and many others, right? Yeah. And whether it be videotape testimony, which is fully transcribed, or in-person testimony, you know, it's amazing how people in the former president's inner staff, you know, basically saw what was going on in January and said enough is enough. And the truth is coming out from people that were physically there, or people who were with other people that are physically there. And between text messages and emails and other things, you know, close to eyewitness accounts or people in the room or around the room, you know, we're getting a better picture of what's really going on. And this isn't, you know, coming out of Congress. It wasn't like a Congress person is out there saying, hey, this is what happened. I mean, these are people that, you know, the closest. That are earshot of what's happening. You know, the layers are being peeled back, and, you know, it's up to you what you want to believe. But, you know, if you can't believe the folks that literally were there themselves, seeing it themselves, I don't know what to tell you.
Right. Yeah. It'd be up to the Justice Department ultimately to determine if there's sufficient evidence to warrant further action.
Yeah. January's committee had its own independent investigators, and these weren't like, you know, you or me. I mean, these were like professional investigators. I mean, the law enforcement quality investigators, you know, on top of their committee staffs, you know, to do this kind of work and reviewing, you know, amazing amount of documentation. I can't even guess how many pages documentation the staff had to review. You know, if the Justice Committee determines that they have sufficient evidence that they control, you know, it's up to them to decide to turn it over to the Justice Department. And I fully expect it probably will. And anybody who was on videotape sworn testimony and in-person sworn testimony, you know, that stuff is in public domain now. As soon as they release it to the, as soon as it's on TV, it becomes public domain. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the Justice Department's already welcome to that material as well as anybody else. And also the broad range of people. I mean, you had people who were participating on January 6th, a riot, insurrection, mob, whatever term you like to use, as well as, you know, people in the inner circle inside the Trump administration. So very broad range of folks. And of course, I had election law experts, as well as lawyers, including the Trump's own election campaign people. This wasn't
and his attorney general at the time. Yeah.
And his private attorneys. The two that are having obviously difficulties is, you know, Giuliani and Bannon and a handful of folks. But also, you know, keep an eye on things happening in Georgia as well. I mean, you know, they've been issuing subpoenas about delegate fraud, electoral delegate fraud, which, you know, has been confirmed in six states involving various Republican officials that are also elected officials, not just any officials, as well as Trump campaign folks, which they have a paper trail that was trying to follow the paper trail to the original perpetrator. And Lindsey Graham and others have been subpoenaed in Georgia about, you know, their participation, because if they don't have a paper trail, you know, in getting subpoenaed to a grand jury, they have no reason to bring a grand jury unless they found something.
That's right. Yeah.
And Lindsey's Graham's judge in South Carolina, he's from, you know, said, you got to go. The government, you know, is not going to stop extradition, and there's going to be no court order in South Carolina say it's illegal. He's got to go, or he's going to face what's that called? Perjury? No, not perjury. Whatever it's called.
You know, that's what I think is what you're thinking of.
Yeah, they're going to issue a subpoena and grab them using their troopers and cooperation of troopers in neighboring states. So, and it's this will continue. And I think between the January 6th case, January 6th case, the Justice Department, as well as all these individual states, law enforcement and election officials are going to be continuing their investigations, and more information is going to come up. And there is a paper trail and a smoking gun, whether it be electronic or physical paper, but they're getting their hands on it.
Stay tuned, as they say. Oh, by the way, there's an election here in Massachusetts this year, too.
Everyone, please remember to vote on September 6th. It's primary day. If you're a Democrat or Republican or unenrolled, all three of you can vote for any ballot. You only can pick one ballot if you're unenrolled, Democrat, Republican, and you remain unenrolled if you do vote in a primary, if you choose to. And I'm aware there are the Green Party and some other smaller parties out there that do have candidates. For example, my good friend Smitty Pignatelli out in the Berkshires has a Green Party candidate running against him. But I mean, they have a primary as well. So, and of course, we had a November election, which of course, the dates slips my mind right now because it's September 6th, but November election on November 8th. It's kind of deep, and I know it seems like a quiet ballot, but again, I encourage people. And you all should have gotten in Quincy your mail-in ballot application.
Yes, it's already arrived.
Yeah, so if you're not going to be home post Labor Day, or maybe you're concerned because Omicron BA5, and who knows what other Omicron BAs come up, have the other hesitant going to the polls. And I do want to see, a lot of attendance in polls. I do like to encourage people to vote. Maybe that's an option, as well as early voting. The city will, Nikki Crispo and the guys will put together their early voting locations and times, so you can go in before if you don't want to use mail-in ballot, like you've done for many years now. And of course, you can go election day as well. So, plenty of ways to vote. To me, I don't know what else we can do. I mean, it's like we made so many ways for you to be a participant, and it's up to you to decide to participate. But I am on the ballot, for September and November. So, I do ask that you please check off my box when you please go cast your ballot, please.
And how do we get a hold of you in the meantime, Jackie?
Well, 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. It is a new phone number. I'm going to remind people again. I do have the office skeleton staffed, so someone will pick up the phone, or you mash a button at this point. I just mash a button and leave a voicemail. You can email me at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. Very happy I'm done with this conference committee, because I'm not getting 100 emails a day. So I will be able to find your email this time. At least more than 100 a day at one point. I think I was looking at like 400 at one point. I'm like, oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah. So like now I will be able to find your email. State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. I'm sure many of have maybe popped by. We just put some useful information and some pictures where I've been, different places, and also some announcements. And at tackychan.twitter, you can see all the people trying to tag me and trying to get my attention to different policy issues. It's almost like I'm not even really using it anymore. It's for everyone else to come at me. Tackychan.org is just a reference page. I do know I am aware we need a website update. It's something we're going to be dealing with in the fall on an update. We've been talking about it for a little bit. And of course, QA TV with Joe here, and I'll be back with Mark Crosby at some point in person down the road. And definitely follow us in the Quincy Sun and Patriot Ledger, our two local papers. As we come to close of a session, we will they'll put up more press releases. And if you are looking for more of a non-tacky talk or written periodical, please go to the HouseNet Community Council website and sign up for the newsletter. I do have a monthly in-print newsletter with the HouseNet Community Council. They're very, very nice to let me have a half a page, and I will talk about stuff that you would not read in the Boston Globe.
All right. Stay cool, Tacky.
Don't stay cool, everyone. Please be safe, and definitely be careful. It is going to be a brutal few days left in this month, or 10 days remaining in this month.
All right. Thanks again. We'll check in next week.
See you next week, Joe.